Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to pack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Apologies for that. Friday, August 20th, 2021. Thank you for joining us today. A lot to get into. Sorry for the delay to start. That's kind of what that was right there in the beginning. I'm not even going to get into it. I don't even care about the suppression and the manipulation or glitches or whatever you want to call it that constantly happen to me all day, every day. Constantly, we're going to get right into the topics today. There's some really important scientific studies that have come out as seemingly every day. Actually, I did forget one thing I'm going to do while I'm talking to you, since it's something on in the same vein that I have to make sure I go back and add something that I already added, since YouTube removes it every single time. The point is, though, there's a lot of scientific studies today, doing that right now, that are completely complementing everything we've been saying. It's peer-reviewed science from the outlets they tell us to listen to, and on and on and on. Now, this is in regard to myocarditis. This is in regard to a couple of really important topics, one of which was natural immunity discussion, or actually two of which are in regard to the natural immunity discussion, showing you, on top of everything else we've shown you, that there is more evidence coming out from peer-reviewed research showing that there is just an endless list of ways that we are completely protected if you had even the most moderate, even if you've had a passing glip, a brush with this, whatever we're calling this today. The point being that you don't even have to actually get infected, as this science is showing us, that just coming in contact with it has the potential to give you lasting antibodies, or specifically T cells in regard to this study, which are different. It's important that we know that we differentiate between the many different things that are kind of included in the idea of immunity. Now, what's crazy to me is that everything we're going to show you today, are all of these discussions, all these scientific studies, are from months ago, if not at the very least weeks ago, and they're huge. One from The Lancet talking about, guess what? Blood clots. In fact, specifically, VITT. Actually, I'm blanking on the first word all of a sudden, even though you know we reported this quite a bit. Of course, the one word I forget, vaccine-induced thrombosis thrombocytopenia. That is being discussed on The Lancet as of August 6th. And it's being discussed as something that really clearly puts a fine point on how obvious this is a problem. Remember when we were censored for saying that was even possible? And here's The Lancet talking about it on August 6th. Where's CNN? Where's Fox News? Right? Where's The Wall Street Journal? Where's Washington Post? Where's The New York Times? Where are they on all this? It's amazing how they just pretend to trust the science while they omit all the science that doesn't align with the narrative. But a lot to get into today. So let's start off with a couple of quick points that I want to share with you in regard to, you know, notes from the ether. This is a crazy topic that I wanted to point out before we get into the main topics, because it's exactly what I said would happen a long time ago. You probably don't remember, because we've shifted, the whole world is tipped on its axis with COVID-19. But this is in regard to even the discussion of the censorship around social media and allowing them to have the ability to basically giving them more freedom, giving government more involvement in the ability of social media platforms to make decisions to censor things based on their accountability. And the idea of all of this kind of stemmed from the point of, well, people using child porn on the internet. And of course, there's nobody that should hear that or think about that topic and be like, that doesn't matter. Obviously, this is a big deal. And everybody anywhere should agree with that. But here's why I think this is so interesting, is because the whole push, the discussion of the Pizzagate topic, or really just the real roots of what that was, which is the underlying Epstein kind of thing, the human trafficking, the pedophilia things, what Epstein's discussion exposed to the people that weren't aware of how obvious this has been for a long time, Hollywood, government, on and on. Going, you know, Franklin scandal, just look these things up on our website. But what's interesting is there's a real issue there. But what happened was, after the whole Pizzagate thing kind of deflated based on the fake news that was pumped into it from the government, making it seem like some ridiculous pizza story in a basement with Clintons, when really it was much more than that. There's something to these conversations, but it really stems back to things like Hillary Clinton and Laura Silsby getting caught basically trying to trap, or specifically Silsby getting caught trafficking children from Haiti, and Clinton's State Department getting her off. There's a full article on the Last American Vagabond. This was discussed by Chuck Todd on NBC. This is not fake news. The point was there's real issues there. Now, after all that went away because they made it something silly, we saw a quick movement happen within specifically the Republican side of this, but it was all across the board, where they were using the idea of that to get people, I think, like the Republican side of this, to think they were fighting for them, whether Trump or anybody else, when really they were using the concept of something they knew they were passionate about to use to justify this. For those on the podcast, you can see this article headline, Apple, or I'll tell you what it says, Apple will scan iPhones for child sexual abuse images. Now, this is one small part of it. Back then, it was just simply saying, well, we need to make sure we can control everything, right? Or social media platforms need to be able to censor anything based on, and the idea is that they're using this thing, and it's a thing, it's the topic we should agree with, to be able to censor and control everything under a guise of what they know we should care about. Now, the point somebody made here with this Forbes article is, well, come on, guys, if they're able to scan your phone for images of any kind, do you not see what that shows you? That you don't have privacy. If they just get to go, oh, it's because this thing we all agree on is bad, which we do, do you not think they could scan your phone for other things? I mean, really, like, think about how obvious this is. So we need to take a moment and realize that this is a backdoor using things that we care about. Think about the idea of health. The simple idea of health in COVID-19 is a bigger concept of this exact thing. They're using things like vaccines or concepts that people are really passionate about to piggyback on, to drive in this larger agenda. I think we all can see that if we're paying attention. Anyway, not take too much time on these opening points. This is a big deal, and this is going to go fall by the wayside because people are rightly so focused on the larger things going on, but this will be used to censor you or to actually completely, you know, violate your privacy, your constitutional rights under at least the guise of fighting child sexual abuse. Now, how about another spin on this? How about the ability to be able to put those things on your phone? Why don't we ever think about that side of this, right? Seeing as how we clearly have pointed to examples of that happening, but anyway, concern. There's more happening than COVID-19, and we have to remember that. Now, another point here on the insurrection, it's just so silly to even, I try not to belittle either, because as I keep pointing out, there were clearly things that happened on January 6th that weren't something you should just disregard. But this was not a revolution. This was not an insurrection. This was not everything they try to make it out to be, when literally no one died there and people were milling around taking pictures and talking to police and going, and the police come in and go, hey man, you mind getting out of this room? And they're like, yeah, no big deal, I'm just hanging out. You know, the point is a lot going on there was nothing even close to what they made it out to be. And a lot of evidence shows that there was a lot of involvement from the government, allowance by the government and the police, and on and on and on, not to rehash the whole topic, but look at what this says for the podcast. Exclusive. FBI finds scant evidence U.S. Capitol attack was coordinated, which clearly puts a stick in the spokes of their entire flowing narrative of domestic terrorism and white supremacy rising up again. Whoops. Well, if it wasn't coordinated, then that's clearly not what they made it out to be. That doesn't mean that there's not bad people planning bad things in the world, guys. It just means that it's not the big thing they're trying to make it out to be, which leads into exactly what they're trying to accomplish. Government 101. But going into some foreign policy quickly on Afghanistan and Syria before we jump into the main points, because this stuff seems to be kicking off in an interesting way lately. First off, again, from the RT this time, Robert Inlakesh reported last time, Syrian air defense systems respond to an alleged Israeli airstrike near Damascus. You know, the wildly civilian populated Damascus. Multiple targets reportedly hit. If anyone's confused about how this is obviously Israel continuing to obviously attack Syria in an obviously illegal way, then you're not paying attention. This is constant. And that's not even a secret. All they have to say is, Iran. Not even Iran something, just Iran. Oh, okay then. We all know Iran is an excuse that we can give. So we'll just make that work. There's civilians there. They're not at war. This is a war crime. There's 100,000 reasons, facetiously, why this is illegal and why there's this. The UN will say this is illegal. But guess what? Will not happen. Any kind of accountability. But it's all about freedom and democracy and equity. You know, no, these are illusory words that they put in front of the situation to make you think they're fighting for something when really they're just achieving their goals at the expense of human rights and freedom and your lives. I mean, there are people that live in these locations, right? I mean, we should care about this. Now, moving forward, I want to quickly play just a real quick opening of this clip. And I hope you'll watch this for yourself. Now, remember on YouTube, you can do closed captioning and you can get what they're saying. This is the title is Urgently. Now, again, I'm not to start out with this. This is a Russian ambassador to Afghanistan saying what he's claiming is the truth about what's going on in Afghanistan. Now, right out of the gate, would it suit the Russian propaganda agenda to basically say what makes it look bad for the United States? Of course. So you should take that with a grain of salt. Russia could be lying, just like I always point out that our government could be lying. But at the same time, it's interesting to see what he says here. Now, it says the Russian ambassador to Afghanistan told what they're claiming is the truth of the fall of Kabul. Now, it's subtitles. I'll read it here. I'll actually turn this down so it's easier to... I'll read it with you. So he's basically saying good evening, and he asked the guy about the situation in Kabul. I just want you to see the first thing he says. Can you explain what's happening in Kabul? In the fact here, for the time being, the judges are on the video footage that shows the little translation issue, the Odessa resident to panic, or the small number of people who actually created this background. Here's what he says. Frames from that part of the airport, which is controlled by the Americans. In the city, situation is directly opposite to the city that now controls the Taliban. The situation is exactly the opposite of everything is calm. So what he's basically saying is that they're lying, which is an interesting situation because, you know, like a wag the dog situation, guys, is not new. This is something that every government, I mean, for crying out loud, you can point back to something like Stalin, you know, literally photoshopping out somebody who stood next to him way back then. Can you even imagine the kind of things they could do today? Deep fakes and whatever else. My point is that it's easy to create an illusion for you in the way they want you to see it. I'm not saying that's necessarily what happened. That was what my gut told me based on the evidence I saw. But remember that this is something that is easily accomplished. And it wouldn't be very difficult to manipulate you, especially knowing that the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act is what gives the government, in their mind, the legal right to lie to you for national security through the mainstream media. That's a simple fact to look up. I've written entire articles on it, right? It's basically the Smith-Mundt Act was when our government decided that it was illegal to propagandize American citizens. Then they got up in arms in 2016. I always forget the dates of these NDAAs. And they said, well, we need to propagandize Americans for national security. So they called it the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act. And then they started to propagandize Americans quietly because nobody talked about it back then, except people like us. And so now they have a legal justification to lie to you through the mainstream media. That news story you saw last night about COVID-19, that could be a complete fabrication based on utter lies if they justify it, the claiming national security, and that's it. It's funny how we can pretend like they would never lie to you, except here's a legal justification they made so they could lie to you. It's ridiculous. Anyway, my point is that he's claiming that this area is controlled by the United States, which we know it is. And they made this look this way, and all these little things you're seeing are controlled areas, but in reality, the larger area the Taliban's controlling, they're claiming, is completely calm. Now, there's plenty of things you could point to that out there would suggest that's not the case, but I found this really interesting. Again, to the original point, Russia could simply be doing this just to mess things up for what the U.S., because this is a really clumsy, as I said before, dumpster fire of a situation for the U.S. government. Even if this was what they, you know, decided to make happen because of where they were, 20 years of a failed occupation. Again, remember that this was never the failed part. They wanted this to be the case. The perspective of Americans, though, it's really embarrassing the way that this is kind of falling apart in front of them. So interesting to see how this plays out. I'm interested to see what Robert's next take on this is in general, because he's going to be writing more content, but I'm interested to see what his take is on this. Now, going forward on this point, and in considering what he's saying there, there's a lot of evidence that does suggest that that makes a lot of sense. They knew, this says, lead State Department memo warned of Afghanistan collapse. Now, pretty sure that's supposed to say July, by the way, following the July 31st troop withdrawal deadline. Now, you can see Biden talking about it on like the middle of July. Oh, this will never happen. Afghanistan will never fall. But the point is, there was a lot of discussions that were had after this, like up to now, where they've claimed that this They've lied to you, which is not new. Every government in this situation will be like, no, it's not what you think it is. It's not terrible. We didn't fail. You didn't spend all this money and have all the people killed for no reason. Trust me, it's all going to work out. And it's not, obviously, unless this is what they want to happen. The point is that they knew things they didn't tell you. Shocker, I know. But please consider this going into COVID-19 discussion as well. They knew it was, the State Department knew, or at least suggested, that exactly what's happening now was maybe was going to happen. They didn't tell you that. Right. They feed you with what they want you to know. Pasky and Biden, they get up there and they spit at you what they want you to think. That's all they're ever doing. And that's why it's so obnoxious to watch those things. But sometimes there's important stuff to point out. But the U.S. is still considering bombing the billions of military equipment that you paid for out of your tax dollars and American lives and Afghan lives. Right. And now maybe we'll just bomb it, just explode it. Just in case. I highly doubt that's going to happen, even if they say it's what happened, because my point is this is all going to go to the Taliban. I think that was what was likely, at least after all of this, the plan. But we maybe just bomb it, right? So how do you feel about that, Americans who've been spending lots and lots of money, trillions of dollars for 20 years? Americans have been killed. Afghans have been killed. And we'll just bomb everything and let the Taliban take over. So what was the benefit there? Literally nothing, except the agenda of the U.S. government. Oh, and don't forget this. This is a horrific, horrific reality. So a shot from a Fox News discussion. U.S. weapons seized by the Taliban. Now, were they seized? Right? Clearly, that's what... Again, it's kind of funny that... I'll leave that alone, because the narrative is that, basically. But it's just interesting how, are there Fox News reporters on the ground? I'm sure they say that. There's people that I've spoken to that have different opinions about what's actually happening. Seized. I mean, were they seized if it was just picked up on the ground? If the U.S. government just left, which is what happened, and they just walked over and took them, is it seized? Interesting. But $85 billion of U.S. funding to the Afghan army. And in moments, they were ran over because it was a puppet show. It was not really what you thought it was. My guess is that money went right into the hands of whoever the government wanted it to, and none of it really happened the way we thought it did. 600,000 weapons, 75,000 vehicles, 200 aircraft. Now, based on past reporting of Fox News, we should probably take that with a grain of salt as well. But, I mean, even like, for instance, something about like when they reported about Obama traveling around the world with billions of dollars and 30,000 aircraft and 40,000 ships and whatever, they're, over the top. I'm being facetious, but remember that whole discussion, which was completely false. There was a huge story about all that went way out of control, and they were all wrong. And they, I think, knew they were wrong. That's why we point out that this two-party paradigm, left-right, they're all trying to lie to you, but it's interesting how much is going on there. Biden to consider using U.S. troops to help evacuate Kabul Airport. That's fantastic. So what's that? 3,000 that went up to 5,000. Then we added 1,000 to help the evacuation and 1,000 to stop the Taliban, even though we were still kind of pretending that was an evacuation part. Now we're considering to more troops to help evacuation. Okay, wait a minute. So what were the first 3,000 and then the next 2,000 and then the next 1,000, the 1,000 after that? Was that all for evacuation? So what's the point of more troops for evacuation, guys? Are we still pretending like this is about evacuation? I can promise you, mark my words, let's put it this way. My opinion is that this is going to end up where they somehow decide to let the Taliban continue to rule. And guess what? They're going to have all these things that they continue to use. They're going to send more troops in, and they're going to continue to stay there to help the Taliban continue to settle the situation, which ends up being forever. Mark my words. I'm not saying I know that for any specific reason, but if you're a student about how these things go, if you watch the way that they, if you pay attention, just the smallest amount, guys, you can see how these things continue to go. Last point on the Taliban, as Sarah Abdallah points out, or on Afghanistan, I mean, four decades of U.S.-led war against Afghanistan. Jimmy Carter, all the way back to 1979, launches Operation Cyclone against Afghanistan left-wing government. Now, what's interesting about this is you can go all the way back to the 80s and look at Zbigniew Brzezinski openly talking about how Afghanistan was the starting point, that was the starting point of where this was all going to begin. And guess what? It turned out to be the starting point. And then we talk about the 7 countries in 5 years and the whole discussion, guys, whether that ended up happening. This was a plan. They knew they wanted to go there. And so are we going to pretend like it just happened to work out where Afghanistan was the place that had, which ended up not actually being tied to Afghanistan being the point where we're talking about 9/11, we would all tie it back. And it turns out that there's a lot more going on in that story, despite the fact that they already pointed that out as the starting point, which then led to Iraq and then led to, you know, we can see how they've been stepping stoned to where they're going now and looking at Iran next. This has been going on for a long time. Ronald Reagan meets with the Mujahideen, calling them freedom fighters. Remember the Mujahideen, who they used to throw against the Soviets, who later became Al-Qaeda, who later became ISIS, right? Your government is, I mean, it doesn't matter. All the narrative, your government created this problem. And it's still there today. And now they're using that problem to justify more things. And they're continuing to create more problems and then pointing to those problems to justify more things, on and on and on. George Bush affirmed support for the rebels. Sound familiar to Syria? But advised them to act with restraint in order to maintain control of the capital of Kabul. Interesting. Clinton bombs Afghanistan and Sudan. This is 1998 as an act of self-defense. Funny how these things just keep swinging around, and that wasn't self-defense then. How are you going to pretend it's self-defense from that far away against imminent terrorism and retribution for bombings in U.S. embassy? Okay, so the hypothetical, this is the Bethlehem Doctrine. This is that we have credible evidence that they probably are going to retaliate somewhere at some time so we can kill them and pretend that was self-defense. That's Israel and the United States. They're the only ones, I think the U.K. as well, that adopted this ridiculous mindset, and they claim that self-defense. 2001. Bush initiates the so-called war on terror and invades Afghanistan. This has all been building toward this the whole time. And this was all based off 9/11, which was the point that they justified everything they've been trying to do. Obama drops 1,337 bombs on Afghanistan and maintains presence throughout the entire of the presidency. Trump drops the mother of all bombs, killing dozens of Afghans, civilians, bombs Afghanistan and withdraws troops. Biden leaving Afghanistan worse than ever. That's not really what's happening, by the way. This is just a graphic from, of course, you know, not a surprise for me. The soapbox says that. That's wrong. Didn't withdraw troops. I mean, that's not what's happening, guys. Did he withdraw troops? Clearly not. There's been like 5,000 more troops added, guys. Let's not just repeat what they say, huh? Anyway, thank you, Sarah, for pointing this out, the ridiculous nature of this ongoing problem. Now, jumping over into some important discussions of natural immunity. Now, we're going to start with the science. We're going to start with new science right out of the gate today. Now, this is 2021, May 22nd, right? So again, this is from May. So if you're wondering why this isn't reported by anybody, media, mainstream, CNN, Fox News, you know, it's because they chose to not talk about this, right? Because these are big deal. These articles are, this research is important. And here's the title: repeated exposure to sub-infectious doses of SARS-CoV-2 may promote T-cell immunity and protection against severe COVID-19. All right, all the things that these injections are not doing, right? To their admission, by the way, they're admitting that it doesn't happen. Maybe some mild to moderate kind of 40%. Nope, they're not doing anything even remotely. And they're all admitting that now grudgingly. Here's something from May telling you that you don't even need, you could just brush past this. Some, let me get into the actual information, but and that could protect you. T-cell immunity and against severe COVID-19, not even their injections do that. Starting from the observation that in several European countries, the number of COVID-19 injections in the second and third pandemic wave increased without a proportional rise in disease severity and mortality, we hypothesize the existence of an additional factor influencing SARS-CoV-2 dynamics. Now, that's an important point for two reasons. The obvious reality that we keep telling you that just because they keep bleeding about cases, if the disease severity and mortality does not rise proportionally to the cases, then it's not as dangerous. Period. And we're talking about that in regard to Delta and everything else. Here we are again. Look, this isn't me just rattling things off in my basement, guys. This is peer-reviewed scientific research from the PubMed.gov, National Library of Medicine, NIH. And they're telling you the clear fact. And that's not even what the article's about. They're stating that as an obvious fact, that because we haven't seen that correlation, we've seen a lot of cases and we haven't seen a lot of severity. That's all the way back to May. And it's continued that way, as we keep showing you. But they're saying because of that, we hypothesize that there's an additional factor here. And it says this factor consists of an immune defense against severe COVID-19 provided by SARS-CoV-2 specific T cells progressively developing upon natural exposure to low virus doses present in populated environments. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like exactly what they're trying to keep people from doing. Being in your, going out, going to the park, going to the store, and just kind of brushing past these small, low dose kind of scenarios. And that's giving people natural immunity. I love that this is, it's almost, I mean, I can't ignore how every, I mean, and I'm not even trying to be hyperbolic here. Literally every single choice that I've seen them make, every single one of them has been counterintuitive. It's been leading you to more problems, or at the very least, in this case, keeping you from having something that would keep you safe. All at the cost of saying this injection, this experimental unapproved gene therapy that we're forcing on everybody, but despite it being unapproved, that's what you have to do. Which, by the way, remember, that thing removes the antibodies from your blood based on what the everybody we're reporting on is continuing to tell you. I could play that clip again, but I played it many times. But as the mainstream media reported, the injection was removing the antibodies from convalescent blood. It's just baffling to me how we can't see how obviously their choices are either making you more, increasing your risk, making you sick, or shielding you from things that would keep you safe. It says, as suggested by recent studies, low-dose viral particles entering the respiratory and intestinal tracts may be able to induce T-cell memory in the absence of inflammation, potentially resulting in different degrees of immunization. Now, obviously, this is not certain, you know, like that informed consent document that was like absolutely specific and serious risk that you should tell everybody about, and they still didn't tell anybody about it. Nonetheless, it's still important, taking in conjunction with everything else we've already talked about. You know, the fact that your natural immunity, based on what the WHO, Nature, the NIH, everybody says, is lasting, durable, robust, and possibly the rest of your life, 99% of the people dealing with it. On top of that, and this speaks to the other one, actually. Let me see if I can just grab that since I forgot about that. I think it was this one. Perfect. This one's important because it kind of goes hand in hand with this. This is why it's saying people, this is again from March 15th, 2021. So it almost seems like this followed that up with, this is May. So, but this one was saying in March 15th that the majority of uninfected adults, so in the United States, the majority of uninfected people already showed pre-existing antibody reactivity against SARS-CoV-2. Peer-reviewed research. Why aren't we talking about that? Like, this is just completely disregarded. And it's saying that before all of this, you already had pre-existing antibody reactivity. And then what this is saying is even more so, as you can see, that this is just basic, you know, being in a populated environment and having natural exposure just without even getting sick gives you potential immunity, T-cell immunity. But then remember that The Lancet also said the same thing, regardless of disease severity. Was that over here? Thought I had that up somewhere. Oh, maybe right here. Yeah. Regardless of disease severity. So what this is a big deal. Now, bringing this to the next point, this is July 15th, 2020. So this goes back even before this was happening. This is in the midst of the first wave we're being told in 2020. This is SARS-CoV-2 specific T-cell immunity in cases of COVID-19 and SARS and uninfected controls. And this is tying this all together. Now, it says memory T cells induced by previous pathogens. So this is interesting because now we're talking about, like likely mentioned in the beginning. Someone's saying the sound might be a little off, everybody. Let me know if that's the case. I could double check. No, it does look like we should be good. If you're having sound issues, please let me know, guys, in the chat. I'll keep an eye on it. But what we're talking about is the cold, right? Or other things, as you'll see them list off here. Some of this is a little bit hard. I'm going to read this full abstract. Some of this is, and I believe there were some parts down at the bottom I had highlighted too. As always, guys, make sure you read these entire things. Yeah, I had something at the bottom. But there's a lot of stuff in here that may, you know, specific types of proteins and different regions that are maybe a little confusing, but the point is of what they really get at. And this is previous things as well as interaction, like they're saying, all ultimately potentially lead to T-cell immunity. So thanks for the heads up, guys. So it says memory T cells induced by previous pathogens can shape susceptibility to and the clinical severity of subsequent infections. Little is known about the presence in humans of pre-existing memory T cells that have the potential to recognize severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2 or SARS-CoV-2. Here we study T cell responses against the structural and non-structural regions, and that's where they list the N protein, which is the nucleocapsid, the NSP7 and the NSP13 of ORF1, That's the non-structural. Just so you can see, they're going to reference those later. Structural versus non-structural regions of SARS-CoV-2 in individuals convalescing from coronavirus disease 2019, meaning people that are recovering. They've been sick and they're getting better, and that's when they have the antibodies, and that's when that's the convalescent blood. That's what people talk about. And remember, the point is that you get an injection after that, it removes those antibodies from your blood. Maybe I have to play that clip now since I keep saying that. It says, in all of these individuals, we found CD4 and CD8 T cells that recognized multiple regions of the N protein. Next, we showed that patients who recovered from SARS, so SARS, the original, not SARS-CoV-2, SARS, possessed long-lasting memory T cells that are reactive to the N protein of SARS-CoV-17 years after the outbreak of SARS in 2003. It says these T cells displayed robust cross-reactivity to the N protein of SARS-CoV-2 from a different, you know, we're talking about something else, which, by the way, interestingly suggests that there's more connection there. As I mean, in my opinion, right, that there's more connection. I mean, remember people like Dr. Boyle telling us that all of these things are manipulated, that all of these things are in fact bioweapons. That's his statement, and I happen to think there's a lot there to look into, right? I mean, the reality of these, in my opinion, these all are bioweapons. These are all things that have been toyed with and tweaked and played with in places like Fort Detrick or Wuhan. That's what they've been doing. Anyway, the point is that dealing with something from 2003 apparently can have robust cross-reactivity to the N protein of SARS-CoV-2. Why aren't we considering any of these things? It's just injection or bust, which, by the way, exposes the whole point, the whole agenda here. If we're not considering what scientific research has always told us is the best way to go, how do we not see how that's an illusion? A nefarious agenda is a better way to put it. It says we also detected SARS-CoV-2 specific T cells in individuals with no history of SARS, COVID-19, or contact with individuals who had SARS or COVID-19. That's crazy. So this speaks large. This points back to this topic, right? So what this study is telling you is that people had T cells in regard to that worked, that had effect, that were T cell reactivity in regard to SARS and COVID-19, specifically SARS-CoV-2, who had no history of SARS, not COVID-19, or even coming in contact with people. So that sounds to me like someone who just in their environment, not necessarily being in close proximity, but as they point out here, just being not having natural exposure to low virus doses present just generally in populated environments, and they end up with this T cell immunity. Just my opinion, but that's clearly what it's happening. People have it regardless of whether they've had contact. And again, that also points to this. A majority of uninfected people show pre-existing. All of this is relevant to the conversation. None of it's being discussed, maybe with the briefest of discussions on Tucker, where, you know, talks about the natural immunity, shows you some of these studies, but this is we got to give you the full picture here. Now it says, SARS-CoV-2 specific T cells in uninfected donors exhibited a different pattern of immunodominance and frequently targeted NSP7 and NSP13 as well as the N protein. Epitope characterization of NSP7 specific T cells showed the recognition of protein fragments that are conserved among animal beta coronaviruses but have low homology to common cold human-associated coronaviruses. Thus, infection with beta coronaviruses induces multi-specific and long-lasting T-cell immunity against the structural N protein. Understanding how pre-existing N and ORF1 specific T-cells that are present in the general population affect the susceptibility to the pathogenesis of SARS-CoV-2 infection is important for the management of the current COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah, trust the science, though, and they just don't do that, right? This is literally telling you that this is important. Understanding the pre-existing T-cell immunity that exists in the general population, whether it's because of the common cold, past SARS discussions, or just discussions that they're pointing out in these other studies, that it is valid, that it's relevant. But nobody cares. This is nature. Right? This is one of the most respected scientific publications in existence. Uninfected controls. Blows my mind. But I'm going to play this again. Bear with me. Just for those that haven't seen it, it's only 1 minute. This is on top of everything else, right? On top of all of this. So this is the important part, because all of this is telling you exactly what I briefly said, that all of the people they're telling you to listen to have already said that up to 99% of people have lasting immunity, robust, possibly the rest of their life. And then even if they're not infected, even if they've had the common cold, even if they've just been in contact with an environment, that it all is still possibly there.
Now, here are some new studies. Here's one from Cell Reports Medicine. Longitudinal analysis shows durable and broad immune memory after natural infection. And guess what? With persisting antibody responses and memory B and T cells. That's a slam dunk. And this was, where was it? Right here. This was from July 20th, 2021. Here's The Lancet. June 1st, SARS-CoV-2 elicits robust adaptive immune responses regardless of disease severity, according to what they tell you. Overall, the majority of patients have robust adaptive immune responses regardless of the disease severity. Here's also the NIH from January 26, 2021, telling you lasting immunity found after COVID-19. You know, all the people we're supposed to be listening to, right? Here's Nature, most trusted scientific publications. May 26, 2021, had COVID, you probably make antibodies for a lifetime. Bone marrow cells that can churn out antibodies for decades, right? Probably make antibodies for the rest of your lives. And here's the WHO telling you, within 4 weeks, 90 to 99% of individuals who've been infected have detectable antibodies. Remember, that's regardless of whether it is severe, regardless of disease severity. So if not up to 99% of people, regardless of how severe, do have these antibodies, and Nature tells you they can last the rest of your life, right? And this most recent peer-reviewed study tells you that it is durable and robust. This is huge, July 26th. On top of that, here's one from March 15th that adds something even more important. Regardless of any of what we just told you, a majority of uninfected adults, people that have not even been affected with COVID-19, show pre-existing antibody reactivity. There's no misunderstanding this. And it comes from The Lancet. It comes from NIH. Comes from Nature. Comes from WHO. Comes from a peer-reviewed scientific research. I mean, it just gets that they're pretending this isn't there.
So again, on the note, guys, that I hope I know most of you understand there's a reason for repetition, especially when we're battering back against propaganda, which is all they're doing is repeating things over and over and over. Safe and effective, masks work, they work, they're safe and effective, right? There's a point to this. So as always, thank you for those bearing with us for the repetition of some of these things, especially for those new to the channel, right? It's important that we kind of lay that groundwork. So just as always, bear with us and help us join in the effort to reach those new people, right? All of us should be here to reach that one new person in the chat. That's what this is all about, always. And again, shout out to Star for doing such an outstanding job on these clips. Apparently she's got more coming your way. It's really helping us reach a lot of new people. So she's doing a great job, and make sure you give her a shout out. So going forward, this is the important part to reiterate as well. So we're talking about the concept, but the research is showing us that you don't need anything else, right? That especially if you've had a natural infection, that you're pretty much good to go. And this on top of that is showing you that if you've had that natural immunity, which 99% of people up to have for the rest of their lives, Science Magazine is telling you that you have ultra potent antibodies against diverse and highly transmissible SARS-CoV-2 variants after you have natural immunity. And here's their post on Twitter. Convalescent plasma, so, you know, blood from people who have already recovered from COVID-19, from 22 people who've been infected, contain 4 antibodies that are extremely potent against 23 variants of SARS-CoV-2, including several variants of concern, like a Delta, for instance, which Israel's data has already shown you that it's Lambda, Delta, your natural infection is working wonders against it. Shocking, because that's how the body's supposed to work. And their weird experimental unapproved gene therapy, weird how it's not working properly. Who could have guessed? Based on the previous research, which we'll get into in a minute again from Moderna's side, but this is so important that nobody is talking about. If everything we just went over is what the science is showing you, and it's showing you that you're working well, better than the injection against even the variants, and we're showing that their new discussions are saying, look, it's lower, we need the booster now. How is it possible that we're still pushing this in as the only thing? All the people saying there's no evidence of this stuff are either lying to you or so willing to blindly trust who they think is the right person that they're completely lost, whether they're doctors or PhDs or anything. I was making this comment earlier today I saw somebody stand up at a school. I think it was a school board meeting. And he goes, I'm a PhD from Oxford. And the first thing out of his mouth is incorrect. And it just bothers me. And it's the point is simply that just because somebody's a doctor, a PhD or a scientist, whatever, doesn't necessarily make them absolutely right, which is how the media began this push. They're a doctor. You should listen. But then all of a sudden, all of these doctors and scientists came out and started saying things they didn't like. So then it had to be, well, some of them, they're all doctors aren't created equal. Well, yeah, we should all agree with that. But the point is they just keep pointing the ones that we point to and say, well, that's the one that's not equal. Those are the bad ones. Ours are the good ones. That's ridiculous. The point is that the guy stood up and made the claim, I think it was, that Robert Malone was the creator of the mRNA injections. And that's not accurate. He created the technology that was used to create those injections. And he himself has made that distinction many times. So just point is that this doctor stands up and immediately discredits himself by saying something that's easily verifiably incorrect. Doesn't mean his point wasn't correct after that, but we all have to do our own due diligence, guys. You need, and I know you know that, and that's why you're here. But the fact that you're protected because you have natural immunity is something that they're hiding from you. And I think it's an obvious, there's an obvious reason why. Here is what Forbes is reporting. Oh, and by the way, in that opening clip, I forgot to mention on that. Remember, I've played that clip many times, and that's going to become very relevant again in a couple of moments. And that's exactly why I keep playing it, because this has always been the ploy, the agenda, to turn your cells in your body into drug factories. That was a guy with Forbes reporting that, or being interviewed with Forbes, and then showing a Pfizer doctor doing the discussions. This is about Pfizer and Forbes reporting it. That was way back in the beginning of all this. And now if you say they're trying to turn your cells into drug factories, they'll call you a conspiracy theorist. That's why I keep playing it, because it's crazy. But here's what Forbes is reporting. As of July 23rd, Pfizer shot just 39% effective against Delta. Wait a minute. Didn't Walensky, the CDC, and Biden and Kamala Harris all just tell us that it was perfectly effective and it saves your, stops you from getting, it works against the Delta variant? Obviously not. And if I've been saying that to you for months because the data showed that, and they've been telling you the opposite, and only now they're beginning to pull that back, what does that show you? That we were telling you the truth based on the data a long time ago and being censored for it, and now finally they're admitting what was always the truth, and now you can look back and see that. But guess what doesn't change? We're still censored. They still treat us like the conspiracy theorists, and they're changing the narrative as they go forward. You all know that. That's why you're here. But it's incredible to see how this keeps happening over and over and over. And that's why I believe that the people that are trusting this are diminishing. I find it impossible for people not to strip over some of this stuff and be like, wow, that's pretty crazy. These are coming from mainstream locations, but largely prevents severe illness, it says. And that's the dumb part of this, right? That's the ridiculous part. If it's 39% effective against the infection, but it still largely prevents the severe disease. Well, no, it doesn't, though. No, it doesn't, though, right? Despite what Israel's saying, that it's the unvaccinated's fault for why it's happening, they're still telling you that most people that are in the hospitals are vaccinated. So you can't keep saying that it's only where I jumped ahead. Where was I? Well, way ahead. That it largely prevents severe illness. This Israeli study suggests. What's funny is they're pointing to one study, yet all the other things we've been seeing from Israel, they just ignore. That's called cherry picking. Now, I'm going to go through this study on a different show, and I'm going to point out for you why this is subjective. And it's the same way they always do this. But here's the main point of this. 39% effective against Delta infection. Remember, first of all, that they lied to you about the vax-unvax discussion. This is the Washington Post reporting to you in regard to, and this is what the CDC director just admitted, Walensky. It says preliminary data from a collection of states over the last 6 months. It turned out to be several. So not just several, which I don't know, could mean like 3, 4, 5. Or maybe she's using that in the wrong way. At the end of the day, it's not all the states. Preliminary data from not all the states, she said, suggested that 99.5% of the deaths from COVID-19 in the states have occurred to unvaccinated people, right? They've been running this forever. It says other officials cited those rates at a constant refrain throughout July, encouraging vaccinations. We all saw this. And I continue to point out that that was baseless, not based on actual information, preliminary at the best half of the states with not the same reporting. And that's what the CDC said. I've been telling you that for months. And guess what? This vindicates me if you haven't seen this already. In response to a reporter's question, August 5th, Walensky acknowledged they were based on data from the first 6 months. Oh, you mean the time frame from when most of the people were unvaccinated? Oh, shocking that most of the people in the situations in hospitals would be unvaccinated if you're talking about a time when most of the people at that time were unvaccinated. Isn't that funny? Not really at all. That's deceptive. It's a lie. She intentionally misrepresented the situation at a time when obviously most of the people currently are vaccinated based on all the data we can show you. And it says, as a result, they almost certainly overstated the effectiveness against the Delta variant since that time period included several months when most Americans were unvaccinated. That is a deceptive lie. It's intentional, guys. They lied to you. Now, the reality from Israel, this is one I haven't showed you in a minute, but this is back from July 16th. And the link to this study is right here. I've shown it to you live on the show many times, is that you can see in the age groupings, and this hasn't changed. This has actually gotten worse. That in every single age group, you can see the percentage of cases that are vaccinated are almost, 79 is the lowest percentage on the podcast. And you guys have heard this many times. The age group 20 to 29, 79% of the cases, and these are cases, this is, where was it said? This is just cases. Remember the point being adding to that, that most of the people in the hospitals are vaccinated. So you add to that point, but 79% of 20 to 29 are vaccinated. 80% of 30 to 39 are vaccinated. 84, 40 to 49. It goes up. 89, 93, 92, 100%, 90 and over. All vaccinated. But then, they're not being hurt. But they are though, right? That's the point. They are going to the hospital, majority of them. And here's what it says on science, right? Sciencemag.org. This is a grim warning from Israel. Vaccination blunts but does not defeat Delta, which, remember, is what creates the perfect circumstance for making variants, as the research has shown long before this. And we've shown you the study many times. It says, what is clear is that breakthrough cases are not the rare events the term implies. You might want to tell that to CNN and Fox News and the Washington Post and New York Times. They don't care. They keep saying the opposite. It says, so that's them not trusting the science. It says, as of August 15th, 514 Israelis were hospitalized with severe or critical COVID-19, a 31% increase from just 4 days earlier. Of the 415, almost 60% were fully vaccinated. That's hospital. 60%. Of the vaccinated, 87 were over 60. So the very population we're supposed to be protecting are the ones that are being most affected. It says, quote, there are so many breakthrough infections that they dominate and most of the hospitalized patients are actually vaccinated. This is as clear as it gets, guys. And I can't stand that we keep having to batter this back down. They just keep lying to you. Here's the one I showed you the other day, right? This is an adjunct professor, UNSW, Strategic Health Policy Consultant. It says 78% of Israelis over 12 are fully vaccinated with Pfizer, right? I keep telling you this. Almost 80%. They reached herd immunity based on their narrative. Long time ago. Their surge started in December 2020. So the argument that the Delta variant is only happening because unvaccinated is obviously false, because here's how you expose that. They reach herd immunity. So did Malta back in March, long before this big surge happened. And yet, weirdly enough, it's still doing what they're claiming it's doing here in their countries. It says, yet cases surging, restrictions and lockdowns being reintroduced, children infected, Pfizer efficacy perhaps waning in some months, on and on and on. But they just keep lying to you, right? And here's the we already referenced, but from another website, National File. It says CDC director admits those who were vaccinated early at increased risk of severe disease. And then, of course, that this is waning. And this is the briefing we didn't show yesterday, but I wanted to point this point out as well. And we've already told you this, right? An Israeli study is, I think, the first place I saw this, that if you took this injection more than 180 days ago, you're at more risk. You have a severe, this could be antibody-dependent enhancement. I mean, that's what it seems like to me. But this at the bottom line means that why would you take this if most of the people already have natural immunity based on all estimates, and yet this increases your risk if it goes past a certain period of time? And we're going to get to a point in a second where even their own documentation admits that in their minds, after 3 months, you're no longer considered fully vaccinated. 3 months. On top of that, it exposes the whole mostly unvaccinated illusion that they're even using within this, despite the Israeli evidence we'll get to in a second. But here's what it actually says. Well, we'll read this verse. Walensky had previously said that Americans were protected and no longer need to wear masks or social distance so long as they were vaccinated. Quote, you can start doing the things you had stopped doing because of the pandemic. We have all longed for this moment, Walensky once told the American people, and it's now clear the government is walking back those assertions. I can't believe I just forgot something yet again. I have this paper sitting in front of me that I keep forgetting about. I'm sorry to break the flow here. Gosh. Okay. I want to give a quick shout out to a John, the rubber duck guy. I've been meaning to do that just because he's somebody who is a big fan and somebody who works with a group that I really, really appreciate. Blueberry Podcast. That's what I've been using for a long time, and they've really gone out of their way to support me. So I forgot. I had this right in front of me and I forgot to say it in the beginning. John, the Rubber Duck Guy, appreciate your support, my friend. Now, keeping this going forward, of course they're walking this back. And it just goes to show you how constantly the things they tell you are not what the reality is. But let's take a listen to what she says. And thank you for National File for queuing this up in I like when they have the full video and they just queue it up like this. It's easy for source material research. Now check out what she says. I think Orwell actually sent this to me today as well. And it's actually pretty interesting because it's exactly what we've been telling you and being censored for. Shocking. I should just have a repeat statement that says that on the show over and over and over, because it seems like all that ever happens anymore.
And prevent severe infections. The data we will publish today and next week demonstrate the vaccine effectiveness against SARS-CoV-2 infection is waning.
So it's waning, which we already should know, but remember they were trying to hide that from everybody for a long time.
Even though our vaccines are currently working well to prevent hospitalizations, we are seeing concerning evidence of waning vaccine effectiveness over time.
But that's not true though. Again, guys, I can't believe they keep saying this. And again, I showed this one just because it's a director of the hospital, so it's more than one location. But the point is, at the end of the day, we have this all over the place. The United States information we've seen local places showing you that most of them are vaccinated. They just keep lying about it, right? I mean, and then again, listen to what she says next, which is the main point.
And against the Delta variant. Additionally, reports from our international colleagues, including Israel, suggest increased risk of severe disease amongst those vaccinated early.
All right, so how stupid is that? You literally just challenged what you just said. So people who got vaccinated earlier have an increased risk of illness, but you just said that this is working to suppress severe illness? How does that even make, how can you possibly say that after the, you, that's, those are mutually exclusive. You cannot say this, you can't say that it's stopping severe illness and then say, but when you take this early enough or after 180 days, it increases your risk of illness. This blows my mind. The point is, as we've already reported and been censored for, it does after 180, like if you had this in the beginning when they were pushing you to do it early, well, you're at more risk now. So does that mean you should listen to them and take it now? No, it means you should question the hell out of everything they're telling you now. Because back then when they were going, you should do it, don't listen to the conspiracy theorists, get it now. And you got it now, and now you're at more risk than other people. You should think twice about listening to what they tell you to do. Now, going forward, the unvaccinated, the vaxxed versus unvaxxed narrative, that all the unvaccinated in a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Somebody sent, I think it was Orwell sent me this, and this is just a simple, I don't even know where this came from, and it's irrelevant because they link all their source material, and I'm going to show you what it says. I'm going to show you the sources myself. So somebody put together this Dropbox document, is it a PDF? Yeah. And make excellent points here. And they link to legitimate discussion. This is from St. Louis. We'll get into it in a second. Fourth amended quarantine and isolation order. Now, here's what this says, and I this is what I've been telling you the entire time, and I just like the way they put this together. The pandemic of the unvaccinated hoax. How the CDC conducts statistical fraud to create the illusion of unvaccinated COVID cases. Now, we've actually made this exact argument, and maybe it's because maybe the person who put this together was the one that sent this to us the first time. I'm not sure, because there's no citation about where this came from, not even over here under the details. But it says the latest narrative being used to sow division and push the COVID agenda forward as part of the psychological warfare and divide and conquer strategy is a fictional story about pandemic of the unvaccinated. Now it says, in order to understand how this narrative is taking shape, we must first understand how the CDC defines a fully vaccinated person. According to the CDC, in general, people are considered fully vaccinated 2 weeks after their second dose in a two-dose series, such as the Pfizer or Moderna vaccines, 2 weeks after a single dose vaccine, such as Johnson & Johnson. Okay, so it says if you don't meet the requirements, regardless of your age, you are not fully vaccinated. It says without subscribing to any conspiracy theories whatsoever, and by using the CDC's own definition, we now understand that if an adult is injected with any COVID vaccine, then falls ill 1 to 13 days and 23 hours after the injection, that individual will not be considered a fully vaccinated person by the CDC. It says what this means is if an individual goes to the hospital 1 to 13 days and 23 hours after injection and test positive for COVID, that individual will be classified as an unvaccinated COVID case. Now, right there, I would argue that is true in some places, but I have actually seen people reporting a single dose, and that's becoming more common, right? So, but regardless, I still argue that that doesn't go in the category of fully vaccinated people who are in the hospital, but it might not necessarily fall back into the unvaccinated category. It might be in that middle one dose category, but they kind of lump that into a different thing. And anyway, so it's still the same point, right? That they only count fully vaccinated hospitalizations, which is what they really only report in this context when it's a news blip, you know, one little passing discussion is the fully vaccinated in the hospital. And that clearly takes that away. But it, I mean, what about all the different arguments? Well, just get one of the shots because that gives you some, like Biden and Blasio, right? De Blasio, they're all, oh, just get at least one shot. Okay, well, so there's a little bit of an inconsistency here, along with everything else in this entire COVID-19 discussion. But it goes on to say, so when we see the headlines such as this one, and here's the one they're referencing, and it reads it down here, Texas has seen nearly 9,000 cases, but only 43 unvaccinated. Okay, sounds dangerous. It says that it's a deceptive, misleading claim. We can rest assured that these people are, let me see, getting away from the subjective points. It says, of the 8,787 people who have died in Texas due to COVID-19, at least 43 were fully vaccinated. It says this means that 95.5%, of course, you see how they just take that, that's the after one state, right? The numbers in regard to Texas, and they take, and we already talked about this. They took Texas, they took that one part, and they made that a sample that they applied to the entire nation. That's not factual. But that's where the 99.5% statistic came from. The cite in all the mainstream articles, which is completely false. It says 99.5% of people who died due to COVID from Texas were unvaccinated. But then it says, but that's not what it means. It says what it actually means is that of the 8,787 who died in Texas due to COVID-19, or rather with COVID-19, because that's really the reality. Most of these people, remember the beginning, it ended up being something like 2% of them were people who died only of COVID-19, and yet we pretend like this is still happening. It says only 43 of them died after 14 days of receiving their second vaccine. The rest either have never received a vaccine or received an injection 1 to 13 days and 23 hours prior. So we don't have enough information to know how many of those were injected prior to their deaths or never injected at all. Meaning if they got one, it matters. But that's not being, it's the same way they play this game with the cycle threshold, or on one side of it, it's anybody who dies after 28 days of a PCR test. But on the other side of it, it's only people that die with a 28 cycle threshold below. And we won't even report hospitalizations. And right. It's an obvious game they're playing to make things look different on either side. Now, it says what this means is that if 100% of these people minus the 43 were injected and then died from the injection or another cause between 1 to 13 days and 23 hours, their deaths will be classified as unvaccinated COVID deaths, based on nothing but a statistical fraud and a meaningless positive PCR test in regard to the COVID-19 discussion. Now, I'm just going to jump down to this point I was going to make at the bottom here that I think is the most relevant point. Now, it says the CDC will classify your case right here. This is the document from St. Louis where they make this exact point. I'll just jump over there and we'll go through it. That is, they're making the point that after three months from your last dose, a person is no longer considered to be fully vaccinated. And I'll show you the document right now. So you can see how there's just a game of statistics being played here where you can play this on either side of it, right? So if you want to ignore all the things leading up to that 14 day or after it, right? Oh, after the 3 months, right? So let's say you get both your injections and then 3 months and 1 day later you die or you end up in the hospital. Well, that's counted as a not fully vaccinated. So either unvaccinated, well, I guess it has to be unvaccinated since you already have both. You don't fall back into one dose, right? So if you're no longer fully vaccinated after 3 months and you die, that is an unvaccinated issue or hospitalized, right? There was a lot of people who got this in the beginning of the year who are way past 3 months, and I guarantee you are being marked down as unvaccinated. So here's the document. This is from St. Louis County. Fourth amended quarantine. Now, this is a dual purpose here. I want to show you the three-month part, but also show you that places like St. Louis and Florida, which we'll get into next, already have discussions within these orders, government orders, to be able to quarantine, isolate you, and in some cases, force vaccinate you if they deem you to be a public health threat. This is what we keep telling you was going to happen. And they kept saying, fake news, you're crazy, that'll never happen. Guys, this is from February 16th. This is not new. Ask yourself how we can be so outraged about it now, but this already happened. Because the media is not reporting this to you. It says isolation of individuals diagnosed with certain communicable diseases and quarantine of close contact to those diagnosed with certain communicable diseases are core public health practices employed to protect the public. State law provides that the local health authority shall require isolation of a patient. I hate that they're putting these periods here because that means there's text that they cut out. It says, with a communicable disease, quarantine of contacts, concurrent and terminal disinfection, or modified forms of these procedures necessary for the protection of the public health. So they're telling you they can quarantine you, isolate you. And so there's vague verbiage in here that suggests they can treat you as well, which I promise you could ultimately become the vaccination. It says, any person who shall leave any quarantined house or place without the consent of the health officer having jurisdiction, or who evades or breaks quarantine, or knowingly conceals a cause of contagious, infectious, or communicable disease, or who removes, destroys, obstructs from view, or tears down any quarantine card, cloth, or notice by the attending physician, or by the health officer, or by direction of the proper health officer, shall be deemed guilty of a Class A misdemeanor pursuant to this law. Right. Sure sounds like a free country to me, right? You just give note if you evade quarantine based on what law? What did you break? Doesn't matter. This is the sidestep of your constitutional rights, saying, well, danger, quarantine, health issue. And that's why they're using it. It says, in the event the trajectory of COVID-19 cases begin to rise, cases, exactly, not death, there's a reason that's there, because cases can rise with the flick of a switch, with a, I guess that's not the fairest, with a turn of a knob. I'm not sure exactly how you increase a cycle threshold, right? But the increase of the cycle threshold. It says, DPH may adopt emergency policies to alter previously defined strategies for isolation and quarantine of those with COVID-19 and their close contacts. So I love how they always add these things, which we can change things as we go forward based on what we think. There is still limited information on how vaccination efforts affects COVID-19 transmission and how long immunity from vaccination is conferred. You don't say. Don't you love how that's just kind of casually stated? And we've been screaming about that from the very beginning. You know why? Because it was reported from the very beginning that it was not going to stop transmission. And we've been telling you that from the beginning. And they still pretend like, we don't know for sure. That's their favorite statement these days, right? We don't know for sure. It might not be true. We haven't proven it. It's unverified, which means they don't know, but they pretend that means it's not true. Trust the science, though. It says there is still limited information on how vaccination affects transmission. No, it's not really limited. It means it doesn't work. It's not happening. And how long immunity from vaccination lack? Nope, that's not true either. They're telling you it's 6 months or less. They're telling you it's 3 months or less if you read the documentation. It says, as such, vaccinated persons should continue to protect themselves and others, including wearing face coverings, maintaining social distancing, and avoiding gatherings of persons outside there. This is never going to end. Remember all the people that were saying, get the vaccine so we can go back to normal. Well, talk to Israel, guys. Talk to Gibraltar, Iceland, Malta. They got their high herd immunity, they tell you, and it's going the other direction. So whose fault is that? Is it the unvaccinated? How does that make sense? It's the unvaccinated. How does that make sense? They're going to switch this to being, well, it's that country over there. So 100% in this country, but that country over there didn't get their herd immunity. So now we're all going to die. Right? When in the past has this ever been how this works? This is such a clear ploy. You played along and injected yourself with an unapproved experimental substance to get your life back, and they didn't give it to you. So keep playing. I'm sure they'll give it to you next time, smarts. Now it says, this amendment incorporates updated isolation and quarantine protocols that affect advancement of evidence-based information and guidelines regarding COVID-19, including quarantine protocols for vaccinated and recently infected persons. Isn't that interesting that they include vaccinated for quarantines? Just kind of telling, isn't it? Now it says, if at any time a person develops COVID-19 symptoms, including vaccinated persons, I just love that, or fully vaccinated persons, the person shall self-isolate. Now, if you're curious what is a vaccinated, fully vaccinated persons, well, here it is right here. Fully vaccinated persons. It says, means a person who 14 days prior received a second dose of a two-dose series, or 14 days prior to receiving a one dose of a single-dose series or single-dose vaccine. A person is not fully vaccinated until this time period of 14 days from the last date of the required dose has lapsed. So the other article, the first point, you could be at 13 days and 23 hours, and they'll still count that likely as unvaccinated. But here's the main point. Additionally, 3 months from the last dose, a person is no longer considered to be fully vaccinated. How is that even possible? So think about the time. So basically you have what, 2.5 months of like workable time where you're technically fully vaccinated. And then after that, you're still considered. I mean, and even within that time frame, you still have to isolate, still have to wear a mask. You can still transmit it. You can still catch it. Your viral load is still the same. But we're crazy though, right? This is so ridiculous. It's just, I can't even help but laugh how dumb this all is. 3 months, right? So again, after 3 months of people that have been getting it and they're telling you that you have an increased risk after this time frame, right now they're telling you those people are unvaccinated in the system because they're no longer fully vaccinated. And those are being counted as hospitalizations for unvaccinated. And that's the illusion. Remember, that's the illusion because we know they're lying because the data everywhere else is showing us the truth. So this is like the PCR illusion. Even with the illusion, it's still showing us that they're failing. Now, what's funny is I think I missed a point here. Well, I was just going to point this out. I was laughing about the fact that I removed my highlights. They're basically saying in this document that it's no longer, that this is still considered to be a disease of high consequence. Right. That's why this continues to happen. But I just wanted to again point out how ridiculous this is that on the UK website, gov.uk, at last updated May 12, 2021, it still says as of March 19, 2020, COVID-19 is no longer considered to be a high consequence infectious disease in the United Kingdom. I don't even know how we explain that. And yet here we are screaming about the biggest pandemic in a century, but yet they simultaneously no longer consider it to be a high consequence infectious disease. This is ridiculous. But anyway, what isn't in the COVID world? Florida is having, somebody shared this with me today, and this is actually really crazy. And it leads into the same point we've been telling you. That Florida, DeSantis specifically, while taking this stance as the one fighting for you, and maybe he is, and he's lost in this like a Trump would be, claiming they're stopping the vaccine passports, right? And that's what this did seem to do. This emergency, they passed a bill, and this is actually the one that pops up right from this web page right here. And you'll see this. I'll come back to this so you can see it's the same one. I'm just going to look at the actual PDF here. This is specifically amending 1190, which is what this is talking about. Get it to the top here. Same thing, amending 1190. And what they're talking about here is, you know, basically making it illegal to force vaccine passports and so on, right? But you'll be pretty alarmed to find out what was included in that, right? So it was sold to everybody as a way to protect you against vaccine passports. Yay, we cheer for DeSantis, except there's some pretty alarming amendments in this that seem to circumvent that. And you're probably going to be shocked. Here's what it says. First of all, from the top, oh, son of a gun. I always do that when I move the, there we go. Make sure you can see that. Okay. So it says the state health officer upon declaration of a public health emergency, which means that's already here because they've already declared an emergency. Well, I forget whether there's a declared state of emergency in Florida, but there's already a federal state of emergency. So let's just say specifically a state of emergency declaration by the state health officer, which is a very easy thing to do right now. It's probably already there, may take actions that are necessary to protect the public health. Such actions include, but are not limited to. So we're just making it clear that these amendments are set under the guise of stopping vaccine passports, but it gives them the authority to do this, but not limited to what it says right here. Roll this back up a little bit. It says, ordering an individual to be examined, tested, vaccinated, isolated or quarantined for communicable diseases that have significant morbidity or mortality and present a severe danger to public health. Now, obviously, we would know that that doesn't meet that criteria, but the government is arguing that. So if the government chooses to, they're telling you right here, they just passed a law that says that they're allowed to vaccinate you, ordering an individual to be vaccinated. They can order you to be vaccinated against your will if they decide you're a threat. It says individuals who are unable or unwilling to be examined, tested, vaccinated, or treated for reasons of health, religion, or conscience may be subjected to isolation or quarantine, right? So at the very least, you're going to be forced isolated and quarantined if they decide you're a danger. There's no way we could pretend that this makes sense. Now, of course, what the point is always, if they're unwilling or unwilling to be examined for reasons of health, religion, or conscience. Of course, the point is these are always subjective things that they can decide you don't apply to. Well, even the religious exemption, there's groups you have to speak to apply for this for the passports, right? Anyway, going forward, this is something that seems completely counterintuitive to what the bill itself was saying. Now it says for A, examination, testing, vaccination, or treatment may be performed by any qualified person authorized by the state if the individual poses a danger to public health, which they've already decided you are because they claim you're sick, the state health officer may subject the individual to isolation or quarantine. If there is no practical method to isolate or quarantine the individual, the state health officer may use any means necessary to vaccinate or treat the individual. I hope those people out there in Florida who are feeling that he's on your side are beginning to realize how nefarious this is. So if there, what I hate about this, if there is no practical method, okay, so who decides if it's practical? What if they just go, well, we could isolate you in your home, but there's reasons we don't find that practical, so we're going to use any means necessary to vaccinate you. So it's okay, we're going to stop you from forcing vaccine passports. We're going to quietly add a law that says we can force vaccinate you should we decide to. Good God, guys. None of these people are on your side. That's what we need to see by now, guys. They are not working for you. There's plenty of agendas at play here. And it's just time to recognize that at the very least, we need to question if the government is in any way. We need to always question whether the government is doing something with your intentions, with your interest in mind. I personally don't think it ever happens. Now it says ordering an individual to be examined, just to make sure we're clear here that this is the same document, the PDF, so you guys can look at it for yourself. Finally, on the same vein of thought of, you know, coercion, manipulation, prejudice or disadvantage, you know, like the UNESCO document says they're not allowed to do. But it says university in Connecticut to actually fine $2,000 and block the internet access to unvaccinated students. Remember when they were flipping out about blocking internet access for any reason in these bad guy countries? Uh-oh, now it's okay though because of the bad guy on the anti-vaxxers. Now what about the students that have immunocompromised issues or the students that are pregnant or the students that have religious exemptions or the students that just don't want it, right? None of that applies. How about the students with natural immunity? Doesn't matter. Read it for yourselves. The only thing that gets this to stop is being injected with the experimental unapproved gene therapy injection. That's what's happening. So this university is literally going to make you, you're going to school, you're paying to go to school, and they're going to fine you $2,000 and stop you from being able to access the internet. This sounds like some kind of free democratic society. Guys, this is unbelievable. Unvaccinated students, they're not even considering the many different reasons why this doesn't make sense. Not least of which is that none of these people are at risk. None of them. 19 and below is 1 in 1,000,000 chance of dying. So let's just give it a far shot and say that 25, 26, maybe older, still in college. Remember that that was, even according to the meta-analysis of 113 different studies in regard to the infection fatality rate of COVID-19, they said that 25 was 0.08% risk. 0.08%. And that's including the over 70 high numbers. That's an average. You are not in danger. Adding on your natural immunity, adding on your uninfected pre-existing antibodies, adding on your ability to just be around environments that have little dose, small doses, and having a, there's 1,000 reasons here, guys, why this is being hidden from you, and it blows my mind. And they're going to make you pay for it. Now, moving over into myocarditis, you know, the side effects of the things that they want to force down your throat and pretend aren't there. This is the Washington Post. Of course, I'm using the Seattle Times, who always repost the Washington Post because the Washington Post has a paywall because they're a failing platform. It says, oh, first of all, Zero Hedge post, and I appreciate this. Hey, Jack, you know, from Twitter, what happens to all those who were banned for warning about this? They don't care, right? This is the point I'm always making. There was a lot of people, even like, let's just take it on a Twitter perspective and not like a YouTube perspective. There were a lot of people who simply posted comments with links to articles that said, look, myocarditis seems to be a real risk, and they were censored. They were banned. They were blocked. We all saw it. So here we are with the Washington Post going, hey, officials, are probing whether Moderna vaccine is linked to higher risk of exactly the same problem. They were reviewing possible Moderna vaccine linked to higher risk of myocarditis. So it's just incredible that this continues to happen. It just makes me sad that Jack knows that. The government knows that. I would argue everybody knows that. They just don't care. You weren't allowed to say it back then, and that's why. And as I said, exactly. Anyone warning about this very real risk has been attacked, censored, and ridiculed, and yet they were all correct. And yet they will remain censored and will continue to be attacked and ridiculed. Any questions? Now, here's what it says in the article. Federal health officials are investigating emerging reports that Moderna coronavirus vaccine may be associated with a higher risk of heart condition called myocarditis in younger adults than previously believed. So the risk is worse than they previously thought. Who could have guessed? According to two people familiar with the review who emphasized the side effects still probably remain uncommon. Don't you love that? Who emphasized that the side effects still probably? You emphasize that it probably remains uncommon? Wow, we're talking about talk about going from fake news, not even a risk, safe and effective. You're all good. And it's like, well, it's there. It's worse than we thought. And it probably remains uncommon. As I said before, how many rare and uncommon things do you pile up before they become no longer rare and uncommon? But my take on this article, the real takeaway here is to point out how ridiculous it is that this is a topic that was ridiculous, fake news, untrue, dangerous misinformation that's now being admitted, like so many other things. But on top of that, this article has an interesting spin that I feel here. My gut tells me that this is about leaning into specifically Pfizer. They've already pushed off Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca as the bad ones, even though Pfizer is way more, according to the VAERS reports and everything else, the information we already showed you that shows they're suppressing the things coming out about Pfizer. There's a real obvious reason that Pfizer was always the choice. Remember, just like I told you in December 2020, or even before that, I called this long, and it wasn't because I'm psychic. It's because there's obvious ties here. Ties to Fauci, ties to Moncef Salawi before he left. Pfizer was clearly the go-to. Now, what's interesting is that they're seemingly kind of going, oh, Moderna seems worse. And the article kind of, the end point kind of seems to be like, well, use Pfizer then. That seems interesting to me. Anyway, the point is to show you, we already said this, as always. But here's another interesting reality from the Pediatrics Official Journal of the American Academy of Pediatrics, COVID-19 vaccination associated with myocarditis in adolescents. Now, we've already talked about this in depth, but I'm wanting to show you in this new one and a couple of others just to show you the reality that this is not some uncommon side effect. This is crazy. This is the results under this study. Here's what it says. 63 patients with an average age of 15.6 years were included. All had received an mRNA vaccine. 88% met the diagnostic cardiac magnetic resonance CMR Lakel-Weiss criteria for myocarditis. Now, I misread one of these previous studies on how many, the 40%, and I addressed that before, but I still thought that seemed a little bit alarming. This is incredible to me, and this just continues to add up. If 88% of the 63 patients met the diagnostic cardiac magnetic resonance Lakel-Weiss criteria for myocarditis, what are we talking about? That's a huge amount. Now, whether it goes on to talk about how I think most of them resolve with no real problem, but that doesn't change the fact that there, even if it resolves, as we've shown you, there's lifelong lasting problems when you have an issue like this. Swelling of the heart is a big deal. Okay, so how in the world can we pretend this is, and so we're clear, by the way, this is talking about COVID-19 vaccinations, not specifically. Pfizer has been shown to be far more alarming in this category than in others based on data that nobody's really talking about. 88% met the diagnostic for myocarditis. And that's why I believe this is what's coming out today. This is really ridiculous to me. This is a video you're going to see from Fox News going, you know, just out of nowhere. Let's just casually discuss how weird. It seems like kids have a lot of heart problems. Totally not talking about the vaccine at all. Weird how this report just happens to organically bubble up right at a time when we're seeing a lot of this rise up from the injections causing heart problems. It's just classic.
A Fox 17 News health alert tonight from the American Heart Association about the roughly 7,000 children in our country who suffer cardiac arrest every year, surprising.
This is surprising. And now, as Mandy Gaither explains, the Pediatric Health Association is calling for all children to be screened for cardiac issues.
Oh, you don't say. Oh, and you know what? We'll give you a COVID test while you're here. Oh, you got COVID. That's why you have a heart problem. You see how this works? And the bottom line here is that they're going 7,000. That's a lot. Oh my gosh. Well, how about this is an interesting way to put the focus on pre-existing issues instead. And then all of a sudden, when we have this crazy rise, they're going to go, well, we were just talking about this. There's a lot of problems. I promise you, this is already going to circulate in the discussion where this is a problem that was already there. And we're dealing with something else. It's not associated with it, with the injection that we're being given. Yes, it is though. And if we just showed you the 88%, and according to the 65 people that did get the meet the criteria for myocarditis. And then we want to call for every child to be checked. This sounds a little alarming to me, to be quite honest, at a time when we're seeing a dramatic increase in myocarditis. Not only is this hiding the problem, but it's interestingly using this to drive it another way to create more of the same problem, to use the test to claim that the kids are getting sick and then claim that it's all tied back to COVID-19 and not the injection. Now, in this case, we're talking about kids in regard to adolescents, but you understand that's 12 and up at this point because they're injecting kids 12. And as I keep pointing out, there's evidence they're injecting kids below 12 as well. And I keep telling you that.
Up until now, screenings for cardiac conditions in children have mostly been directed at athletes.
The cardiac arrest in children is a rare event, fortunately, but it is not a zero incidence at all.
In a statement published in the medical journal Pediatrics, the American Academy of Pediatrics is now calling for all children to be screened for conditions that could lead to cardiac arrest or death.
Now, why in the world is this a if every child has to be screened for heart problems, that is not, just children have heart problems. There's a whole, what's causing that, right? What we always want to do in this health system is patch the problem and not address the symptoms and not really address the problem. What's causing children to have these high how about the fact that we're talking about the injections in general? How about the fact that we're talking about the obvious reality that these things are able to shed? And we already proved that the spike protein itself is able to cause disease. And we know the spike protein is clearly the catalyst for leading to the myocarditis, leading to the blood clots. And we've been injecting the population with this for half a year, or a lot more, in fact. And we're not going to consider that that's part of this problem. We keep seeing all these weird increases that are associated with exactly the side effects we're associating with these injections and going, well, who knows? Look at this weird neurological disease over in Canada. It's ridiculous. If we're seeing enough kids having heart problems to where we need to screen every single child, how are we not addressing the cause of that? Who cares? It's a boon for the industry. Let's treat them all and patch them up with whatever we can give them. No, there's a problem here.
Saying that no subpopulation of kids should be selected out from screening because all children could have a potential risk.
Okay, 1, 2, 3.
The AAP says those screenings should be part of a child's regular exam and call for doctors to delve into personal and family medical history and ask questions like, has the child ever had exercise-related chest pain or shortness of breath?
How about the question about whether they got the injection that's currently causing that exact problem? Nah, why would you ask such an obvious question? That's just silly.
By one of these conditions, particularly before they have any kind of a sudden cardiac event, treatment can be initiated, or at least that they can be monitored.
The statement also lists common conditions for primary care physicians to be aware of that could put young patients at risk.
They're showing young kids, but they're, you know, we're talking 12-year-olds as well, right? A lot of these kids have already got the injection. So that is an obvious problem that nobody wants to address.
These screenings could save a life. For Health Minute, I'm Mandy Gaither.
Or instead of the screening, why don't we just remove the problem that is justifying the screening? You know, just a thought. But, you know, we always like to treat the symptoms and not the problem. But here's another point. This is the one I just mentioned the other day. Andrew Bostom, PD, MD, multi-center case series of post-COVID-19 mRNA vaccination injection myocarditis in those under 21 years old or 21 years or younger revealed 49 to 58, 88% with CMR data had late LGE, I want to look this up. Late gadolinium enhancement, a marker associated with 5 times increased risk for long-term major adverse cardiac events. Now, I mean, this is the 88% we were just looking at, right? I mean, this stuff is all over the place, guys, and they're just hiding this stuff from you. There's a huge problem here. It's crazy. Now, by the way, I wanted to laugh at myself again for this. It's just so funny that less than, more, greater than symbol. It just, I don't know what it is about. I was just laughing with somebody about, yeah, I remember all the claim, the alligator eats the bigger number and these little things from school. I just somehow continue to go, was that it? Or am I remembering it wrong? And I always forget it. It's just kind of funny how your mind works. I think it's that I tend to push things out of my mind that aren't relevant, that don't matter. It's like, it's just kind of funny. But this problem is so obvious. The scientific research is all there. Right, you got doctors pointing it out all over the place, and nobody's talking about how real this is. And there's a reason for that. And we're actually going to get to an even more obvious reason of that, which is that there is a huge problem in regard to health researchers reporting funder pressure to suppress results that's been there for a long time, but we'll get to that in a second. This is going back to Moderna from 2017. Now, interestingly enough, our friend Donald Best shared this with us, but we've already talked about this article. We talked about this. I believe at least this was, I think, in 2020. Now, we pointed this out in regard to a couple points showing that Moderna was struggling and had an issue and just kind of hit the, you know, basically everybody was wondering what they were doing. They were hiding things. They were evaluated by $5 billion despite having any valid products. There was a lot of weirdness going on, but there's something else that this shows you. And this says lavishly funded Moderna hit safety problems in bold bid to revolutionize medicine. This is 2017. Now it says Moderna Therapeutics, the most highly valued private company in biotech, has run into troubling safety problems with its most ambitious therapy, Stat has learned, and is now banking on a mysterious new technology to keep afloat its brash promise of reinventing modern medicine. So it's funny how you can promise to do that in 2017, and that's exactly what they're pretending they did. Right. So it's just strange. They were failing at this point and they had other secret things they were doing. So these secret projects, was that what they knew was going to become what they're doing today? And if that was, does that not show you that there was foreknowledge to what we're dealing with? Reinventing modern medicine was clearly a push then, and it's exactly the way they framed it now. Now it says it was to be the first therapy using audacious new technology. Bonsall, being the CEO of Moderna, promised would yield dozens of drugs in the coming decade. Again, guys. How would he possibly know that the thing that they were continuing to fail to accomplish at this exact moment, that they would promise that this exact thing they failed to do would yield dozens of drugs? This was always the plan, which is what I said last time. The plan was to use the mRNA platform to become the new medicine. This is what they all, this is just like the Flexner report back with the shift into petrochemical drugs. Guys, they are hijacking our direction for medicine and driving it in the direction that benefits them or benefits what they want to accomplish. It's right there in front of you. It says, but that's right. I forgot how to pronounce this. The Crigler-Najjar treatment. I know that's inaccurate. I forget. Let me just do this real quick. Maybe it'll give me the dictionary. Here we go. So, it just says Nadir. Craiglinadir. I'm not sure, but this is one of the things they were trying to fight or to make an injection for back in 2017. But it says the treatment for that has been indefinitely delayed, as Alexion spokeswoman told Stat. It never proved safe enough to test in humans. This is the same technology, by the way, according to several former Moderna employees and collaborators who work closely on the project. Unable to press forward with that technology, Moderna has had to focus instead on developing a handful of vaccines, turning to a less lucrative field that might not justify the company's nearly $5 billion valuation. It says, quote, it's all vaccines right now, and vaccines are a lost leader. Moderna right now is a multi-billion dollar vaccines company, and I don't see how that holds up. Unless COVID-19 hits, whoa, they saved the day. It says his presentation instead focused on 4 vaccines that the company is moving through the final phase of clinical trials. 2 targeting influenza, mRNA, a third for Zika, and guess what? The 4th remains a secret. I wonder what that was. Bounsell clicked through graphs of data from animal studies before hurrying out to tout Moderna's balance sheet. He goes on to say, founded in 2012, Moderna reached unicorn status a $1 billion valuation in just 2 years, by the way, which was faster than Uber, Dropbox, and Lyft. Anybody make sense of that? During a time when they literally had failed at everything they tried to accomplish and never produced one product? It's because they knew this was always the plan, guys. You don't get a unicorn valuation and rise faster than Uber, Dropbox, and Lyft if there's something somewhere that people know that we don't. It says the company's premise, using custom-built strands of messenger RNA known as mRNA, or really the truth being they used mod RNA, which is modified in a lab created mRNA, not mRNA, right? That's one of the things they hide from you, which is right on their documentation. It aims to turn the body's cells, guess what, into ad hoc drug factories. That's what the drug is doing to you right now. This is what they're talking about. And they're aiming to turn your cells into drug factories, right? This is what they called it. This is what we talked about. And this is with Pfizer. This is what Forbes reported. And this is what they're now telling you, creating the spike protein right now. But guess what? They pump in the new code and boop, boop, boop. And then you're pumping out a new drug. No safety test required. This is what they were leading to, guys. And this is what they've already told you is going to happen. If you just heard me say that and you said, that sounds crazy, you're not doing your due diligence. This is what they've already told you is the plan. Moderna, Pfizer, they're building the platforms and building to the point where they don't need a safety test. They just need new genetic code on a computer screen. Plug and play. That's what they call it. It says, but mRNA is a tricky technology. Several major pharmaceutical companies have tried and abandoned the idea, struggling to get mRNA into cells without triggering nasty side effects. Seems they still haven't got that figured out. Bonsall has repeatedly promised that Moderna's new therapies, the secret ones, would change the world. Isn't that interesting? But the company has refused to publish any data on its mRNA vehicles, sparking skepticism from some scientists and chiding from even the editors of Nature. But here we are. Why would they keep it so secret until now? Maybe so we didn't know what was being worked on? Right? I mean, there's a big discussion of all the patents around all of this, which we've talked about in the past, right? And it's valid discussions there. Right. Of course, they always sidestep and say that these are just patents on, discussions of coronaviruses. The bottom line is there's an obvious paper trail here and how this stuff was poked and prodded and worked on. And it leads to exactly where we are now. Now, finally, Oh, no, a couple more points. It says, where was I? Right there. The technology would have to be miraculous. Hail Mary sort of save for them to get where they need to be on their timelines. And what do you know? That's exactly what happened. Miraculous Hail Mary, which, by the way, that's what they called it, but clearly we can see how it's playing out. But the government, the media, took at face value what the companies who had a profit motive said about what they were doing. And all the research is now coming out and showing you that all they did was a really quick, what they called a flare in the pan kind of results where they didn't pan out. And we saw that quickly wane. 3 months now and you're no longer fully vaccinated. And that's what they did. And if we had a full, potentially 2-year safety and efficacy trials, which is the median of what the previous ones have always been, we got 2 to 6 months, give or take. We would have seen this. We would have gotten animal trials. We would have seen antibody-dependent enhancement. We would have seen the problems, but they didn't. They jumped past it and said, it's for your safety. Clearly not. But it says, in order to protect mRNA molecules from the body's natural defenses, drug developers must wrap them in a protective casing. You all know what this is because you watch this show. We're talking about lipid nanoparticles. For Moderna, that meant putting its Niger therapy in nanoparticles made of lipids. And for its chemist, those nanoparticles created a daunting challenge. And this is what we reported to you back when we first read this article. Well, you dose too little, and you don't get enough enzyme to actually affect the disease. You dose too much and the drug is too toxic for patients. Well, remember the conversation here is that this is how they figured this out. The solution was to increase the lipid nanoparticles to make this work. But here we are acknowledging the fact that if that dose is too high, it becomes too toxic for patients. Anybody see what's happening in the world right now? Right. It's almost like we just pretend like that never got stated and we just increase the lipid. I even just saw Robert Malone discussing the fact that the lipid part of this is how they got this to claim to be effective in the context of the injection working against COVID-19. But are we not even asking the question of whether that level turned out to be too high or maybe they thought it wasn't, but it is now? I mean, this is a valid point. Now, the lipid, I shouldn't ignore every time I bring up the concept of nanoparticles in any context. Remember that long before COVID-19, their own research showed you that nanoparticles in general are dangerous to your body. that they can build, and they can build up in your ovaries and your reproductive organs, and they can cause cancer. Okay, it's just like the nanoparticles by themselves, the spike protein by itself, the mRNA by itself, all of them individually, respectively, cause problems in your body. And we're just dumping them in one big thing into your body. And they're not even coming close to doing what they say they're supposed to be doing. But it finally says, yet Moderna could not make its therapy work. Former employees and collaborators said the safe dose was too weak, and repeated injections of a dose strong enough to be effective had troubling effects in the liver and animal studies. Remember what we saw in the buildup in the Pfizer study in the liver, the pancreas, and the ovaries? Was it the pancreas? I believe it was the pancreas. All of this correlates with everything we're seeing, and we know for sure, fake news, safe and effective. It's staggering to me. So this was worth pointing out yet again. It's incredible. Now, just so you know, as Defender just points out, this is as of yesterday, Big Pharma eyes the next childhood vaccine cash cow, mRNA vaccines for RSV. You know, those mRNA platform discussions that we have yet to even verify, right? This is the first time these have ever been successful. We just showed you they failed catastrophically over and over until we had a Hail Mary that just happened to work. But did it? Did it? We haven't approved it. It's unexperimental. It's still, we are still in this study phase, and they're already approving or even looking to new modifications of this platform. Yes. I keep showing you, there's like 15 other injections already being worked on, and we haven't even approved the one we're currently considering. Now that COVID vaccines have established mRNA technology as the new frontier for vaccine development, yeah, right, exactly, just like they kept telling you it was going to be their secret vaccine, the secret work was going to end up being exactly what they're claiming it is now today, 4 years later, pharma giants have set their sights on mRNA vaccine for respiratory syncytial virus, which they hope to add to the already overburdened childhood vaccine schedule. Meanwhile, they're not testing any of those things alongside everything else, right? So we'll give it to you at the same time, but we're not going to test whether they have a problem with each other because we're working for your safety. But here's another study that you should be concerned about coming from. Actually, the study itself comes from The Lancet. Here's the article about it. Healthcareineurope.com says rare blood clot in brain after COVID-19 vaccination study gives new insights. The research led by the University College London and UCL Health and published in The Lancet is the most detailed account of the characteristics of CVT when it is caused by a novel condition, vaccine-induced immune thrombotic thrombocytopenia, or VITT, exactly what Dr. Bakhti warned about verbatim and was ridiculed, censored, everything. How many times must this happen before it becomes that ridiculous? VITT is a condition characterized by a blockage of the veins and a marked reduction of platelets, blood components, which are an important part of the blood clotting system. The commonest and severest manifestation of VITT is CVT, which is again, cerebral venous thrombosis, in which veins draining blood from the brain become blocked. Caution against reading too much into the findings of the observational study, saying that reliable evidence about treatments can only be obtained in random controlled trials. I just want to state that as the obvious reality that we keep pointing out. So as the CDC and the media and all the, you know, bleeding repeaters on Twitter continue to cite like one observational study from a lab about masks as the definitive point, when all of the random controlled trials, even their own meta-analysis, pointed out that there's no statistical significance in reduction of transmission, you know, these kind of things, realize that everybody knows that doesn't make sense. The reliable evidence about treatments can only be obtained in random clinical trials. Exactly. But going forward, it says VITT associated CVT has a very high mortality rate. Right. So the thing that they're giving you is increasing your risk of something with a very high mortality rate. In patients with VITT associated CVT observed in the study, though, the mortality rate during admission, guess what, was 7 times higher than the already high mortality rate of this issue at 29%. 30% of the people that have this problem after taking this injection have a really very high mortality rate. Quote, with an illness and of such severity, often in younger patients who were previously fit and well, doctors have been desperate for evidence regarding treatments that might prevent some of the death and disability that arises from this condition. With an illness of such severity. I mean, this is, we're talking about something, they're desperate, it says, for evidence regarding treatments that might prevent some of the death and disability that arises from this condition. They're desperate for treatment. How about the thousands of things we're talking about before, the prophylactic stuff? How about the simple idea of not giving them an injection that creates the possibility of the thing you're desperate to try to treat? It goes on to say, presumably, the reason why the numbers of platelets in the bloodstream is so low is in VITT is because they are quickly used up by the abnormal clotting, which we're pointing out is being caused by the injection. Infusing more platelets may simply add fuel to the fire. So they're saying that even trying to fix the problem may actually hurt the, because this is being caused by something that's not natural. Now, it says right here, between April 1st and May 20th, 2021, we received data on 99 patients from collaborators in 43 hospitals across the UK. Totally sounds like a rare, weird thing, right? 70 of them had VITT and 25 did not. The primary outcome of death or dependency occurred more frequently in patients with VITT-associated cerebral venous thrombosis. Again, first point, this was fake news, dangerous misinformation when we were pointing out this was happening based on the data like this. And here we are yet again. We're showing you that it's happening. It's just incredible to me. Now, yes, the point is that they're claiming it's still rare, but the point is that add that to everything else we just talked about. Why in the world would you take an injection that increases your risk of a high mortality problem and increases your risk of swelling of the heart and increases your risk of stroke or blood clot or anaphylactic shock or Bell's palsy like the minister in Australia just got on live TV? But yeah, it's all safe and effective and the benefits outweigh the risks and blah, blah, blah. Clearly doesn't seem that way. But don't worry, they're about to change the name of the injection, and that way we won't know what it is, because that's all about keeping you safe and effective, right? It's all about safe and effective. Make sure we're safe and effective.
Pharmaceutical giant AstraZeneca will rebrand its COVID-19 vaccine in Australia. The name will be changed to Vaxzevria.
It's just so funny to me. Now, we actually already reported this way back when they first said that might happen, and I laughed about it then. Now, this is being reported as of August 19th, but so this is the equivalent of the U.S. government changing the name of some kind of Hayat al-Sham, or I forget what it was first, to al-Nusra Front, to Hayat al-Sham, and saying they're no longer terrorists because we changed their name. It's just they treat you like you're ridiculously stupid, and you're not. Why would you change the name in the middle unless you're trying to distance yourself from the problem? It's just silly. It really is absolutely silly to me. Now, going forward again to a point about misinformation coming from the authorities, right? Derek Rose has been pointing out the really alarming actions of this misinformation spreader, this guy that is actively creating a divide. This guy's like literally trying to create a civil war, it seems. Baylor professor urges criticisms of Fauci and other scientists persecuted as hate crimes. So now that we've already seen this argument, they're trying to create a setting here where so-called experts and authority figures are a protected class, just like they tried to do with the media, and they got laughed at for it. Brian Stelter out there whining about being called a name, and I hurt my feelings, and we have to be protected. No, you're in a position where you're doing things that are unpopular. Own it, bud. Or actually, I take it back, because you're not. You're blindly reporting what you're told to do, and that's why you're not good at your job. For those of us out here reporting what's not meant to be reported or not wanting to be reported, that's what's actually journalism. Again, we'll give you the quote from Orwell, right? Journalism is reporting things that people don't want reported. Everything else is public relations. That's what the mainstream media is. But so when they're getting to a point in regard to scientists where they're saying, look, you can't criticize them, how in the world is that possible? We're not allowed to criticize people that are laying down medical mandates for our lives. This is very alarming stuff. Professor of pediatrics. Don't you love that? It's always I keep laughing about it, trotting out. We're pointing to PhDs, Nobel laureates, highly regarded medical doctors, and they're going, oh, here's a PD. He's a pediatrician. But it says a molecular virologist at Baylor College of Medicine is urging the criticisms of Dr. Anthony Fauci and other government scientists to be prosecuted as hate crimes. You realize how stupid that is? Hate crimes aren't a crime. There is no law that says that you can't. This is a... Okay, right now, if you act on something and hurt somebody, there's already a law for that. If I come and I just say, I think you're ugly because you're a certain race or whatever, which is disgusting, and that person should be laughed at because they're a bad person, it's not a crime, right? And this is what incredible, this guy is literally saying, for this thing that we already point at as a big problem that's not actually a crime, despite how much they're making it into that, subjectively or politically, He's going to say that's talking, criticizing, not even saying something false, just criticizing Fauci is then a thing. It goes into a category, which is already not a crime, but we're going to pretend it is and try to attack you for it. This is so incredibly alarming and disconnected from reality. Here's his tweet right here. It says, just out today, my latest PLOS, biology, whatever, discussing my perspective on a new phase of anti-science aggression. So you realize that people criticizing Fauci are people like James Lyons-Weiler, PhD, and people like Robert Malone, Dr. Robert Malone, you know, the inventor of the technology used for the injection that he's trying to push aggressively on everybody, right? These aren't people who are anti-science. Denny Rancourt, PhD. These are actively pro, these are people that are aggressively calling out how we need to stick to the scientific method. But yet this ridiculous person is calling them anti-science because that's all they can do. You're a ridiculous anti-science conspiracy theorist as I'm pointing literal peer-reviewed science. You're a terrorist by pointing out things that I'm backing up by scientific research. This guy, all they have is broad claims of subjective arguments about how we're doing dangerous anti-science things because we all know that masks work and these things are saving lives and then therefore everyone's a dangerous person. These are hollow arguments, not actually rooted in fact. And we've proven it to you with the real science we're showing you. Now, the bottom line is that it doesn't matter whether I'm on, it does matter, but in the context of this point, even if I'm wrong, I have a right to stand up and point out my criticisms of people that are influencing policy. This is the medical aspect of this might as well be politics today. This is the equivalent of saying I can't criticize the president for doing political things that we don't like. Because this is leading to policy. This is quite literally policy today. So you realize how alarming that is? They're trying to take away your ability, you know, rather the illusion of your ability to engage in this political system. Because by the way, you already don't have that ability. But this is one more step about stopping me from being able to say things that then would hopefully influence the illusion of that ability, if that makes sense. But one more point here this is a guy who's screaming about how everything we know about the math, this is a guy supporting things just like this. Supporting that we need these glass dividers between everything everywhere because it protects us, even though that's obviously ridiculous. Even the New York Times has admitted the plastic COVID barriers provide a false sense of security and, in fact, could make things worse. But let's just trust at blind. It's, you know, I think as somebody pointed out down here. Right. So you're saying naturally by prominent, you mean that people agree with you if you happen to be correct or not is irrelevant. Right? Exactly. So these are the people that have told you these things were the right idea. So were they wrong? Were they lying? It doesn't really matter. The point is we need to be able to have the ability to say, I disagree with that. This PhD is saying, no, you don't have that right. Because he's a bad person. This is an authoritarian hiding under a guise of what's right for you, even though it's not right for you. And here is what I find most relevant to this point. August 18, 2021, by Nature. Health researchers, which you could clearly call him a health researcher, more specifically, he's a pediatrician doctor, but he's out there on Twitter spreading information. So he's very clearly in that category. Health researchers support funder pressure to suppress results. Now, on top of that, the point is that the argument would be that, in my opinion, he's not telling you how he's obviously being pushed or driven in a direction by people behind the scenes. But on top of that, he's one of the people that are out there pressuring others to influence or suppress results. That's what he's doing with these kind of campaigns, calling everybody a terrorist that's even remotely standing up. But here's what this says. And this again was August 18th. It says a survey of public health researchers has found numerous instances of trial results being suppressed on topics such as nutrition, sexual health, physical activity, and substance use, with 18%, almost 20% of respondents reporting that they had, on at least one occasion, felt pressured by funders like the government to delay reporting, alter, or not publish findings. You know what this sounds exactly like? And it's literally what it is. The discussion we've shown you many times about the WHO. Oops, hold on. And now pop up. Oh, it is. It's the archive. Good. I'll show you in a second again. The one, you know, the discussion where, you know, health is more than influenza, where they point out the repeated pandemics and health scares are all leading back to pandemics of fear, exaggerated specifically by disease advocacy by health experts, right? It's the constant point they're making. Induced by influence experts with vested interest in exaggeration. This is the WHO in 2011 calling out H1N1 and H5N1, which they still claim were pandemics, despite them literally calling them pandemics of fear, meaning they weren't real. I pointed this out many times. I've done clips on this, or Star has done clips on this. The point is that we're staring at a reality of exactly what they were trying to get your attention for back then. Same with British Medical Journal, same with the HHS. Now they're quiet about it. They're telling you that these things are influenced by disease experts, people that don't want certain published findings because it doesn't work for them. And yet this is fake news today. It says these trials published between 2007 and 2017, the ones that were influenced by people who were pressured not to post or post things, they were cited in Cochrane reviews, which is considered the gold standard of evidence used to inform healthcare decision-making. On that note, remember, one of the most primary points we keep making about the mask argument is from the Cochrane review. Nobody talks about it, though, because it doesn't align with the narrative. But it goes on to say, public health researchers' research has a history of interference from industry funders. So the team behind the study, led by Sam McCrab at the University of Newcastle, Australia, expected researchers running industry-funded studies to be those most commonly acting under duress. But it says, oh, that wasn't the point, actually. I didn't think I had that highlighted. Oh, so here it says, how trial fundings are suppressed. Reluctance over publication because results deemed unfavorable. Look at that. That's the highest result they got. People that are saying they were reluctant to even publish their findings, because they were unfavorable to the people funding them. This is the broken nature of our system. Who funds them? The people who have an agenda. Political manipulation. It says government agencies, such as health departments, might be more inclined to intervene if findings from a study they commissioned are not as expected, or if they are heavily invested in the health intervention, such as an education or health program being trialed, she adds. If it doesn't end up the way they want it, they're more inclined to intervene. Literally stop you from seeing things that are true because they don't like what it shows you. These are health agencies that are ostensibly there to work for you. It's not the truth. A 2016 inquiry into the delayed publication of research commissioned by the UK government agencies identified cases in which publication was, quote, manipulated to fit with political concerns. Oh, I'm so shocked. More recently, the British Medical Journal reported 4 instances of public politicization. I always have a problem with that word. Politicization and suppression of science in the UK during the COVID pandemic. This is even completely tied to right now. The British Medical Journal posted 4 instances of them suppressing science during COVID-19. This is the same entities telling you to trust the science. How stupid does this have to get? Although the research community might be aware that funder interference is a problem, scientists don't necessarily know when research findings have been suppressed. This is huge. Or whether study designs were changed to produce more favorable outcomes, Bald says. This might introduce bias or create skewed results. The point here is that the scientists and doctors who then get presented with things who don't know that it was suppressed or skewed or manipulated by the NIH, who are taught to take it at face value, do so. Like the ones they trot out on Fox and CNN. Some of them believe they're right. The point is that they're proving to you on Nature right here is that once this is put in front of other people, these scientists don't necessarily know when that's happened, even though they all largely know that this is a problem. Do you see where this is going? This is obviously an easy way for the scientific research to be manipulated from a political government level and then presented as completely sound by people who make the decisions whether they are sound. It's all completely coordinated, guys. That's why we see things that slip through, they get peer reviewed, and then the editor steps in and goes, nope, that's not good, even though it already went through the peer review process. This is one of the largest illusions I've ever seen in my life, guys, and it's all there for you to look at. It's right in front of you. And more alarming, the actual experts that are standing up in contrast to this obvious illusion are being attacked, arrested. This is from the Irish Times as 2 days ago. A warrant has been issued for the arrest of Dolores Cahill. The argument is that she didn't appear to a hearing after an allegedly illegal gathering. So this is the point. The UK has now legalized the concept of, so you want to go protest a lockdown? It's against the law. But it's all about freedom and democracy, right? But so now as you protest against what you disagree with, what they're not allowed to legally do because you have rights, and they're going to now say, oh, well, you have to show up. I bet you they didn't even notify her. But regardless, the point is that they charge her with something that's illegal, violation of her rights. Then she doesn't show up to this illegal hearing, and then they put a warrant for her arrest. If she wasn't even notified, it just shows you how completely this process could be something that's set in motion without you even knowing about it. Next thing you know, you're in jail. Now, I'm only saying that, but I'm not saying that's the case here. I'm not sure, but I've seen that take place where people are like, you know, it turns out where they get arrested, the story comes out, and this is the process. And they're like, well, I wasn't even notified. No one even told me I had to show up at court, and on and on. This is somebody who's been fighting for you from the very beginning. Dolores Cahill has been doing a great job fighting for the information, and now she might be arrested. This is what happens in an authoritarian country. Finally, I want to just quickly shout this out for people and leave this on the end of the show here. Good, under 2 hours, looking good. This is from the Rutherford Institute. We've talked about John Whitehead a lot in the past. Haven't had discussions on his topic and content in a while, but he does a great job constantly battering down this narrative in a way. He is one that is not afraid to speak his mind. He was the founder and president of the Rutherford Institute. It is him specifically and the Rutherford Institute put this out in regard to knowing your rights, how to request a religious accommodation for COVID-19 vaccine mandates in the workplace. Now, I'm not going to read through it. My point is I'm going to include this for you. This is one more resource for you. And it's not just about religious accommodations. There's a lot in here about, there was other topics I thought that I noticed as I was scrolling. That form letter to use in providing an employer with a notice of conflict of religious beliefs. There's a lot of good stuff in here. It's a point. And this is well done. And this is another thing you can use to help guide your legal challenge in regard to the illegal forced medical interventions on you and your family. Now, I'm going to leave you today here with this video from, at least from the Crow House, I can't believe I'm... John of a gun, that drives me crazy. I love this guy. Anybody, I can't remember his name all of a sudden, from the Crow House. Leave it in the chat for me, so that I don't know why I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. I'm probably going to think about it the moment I stop talking about it. But the Crow House is doing a great job. 64,000 subs after he got banned from YouTube, like a lot of us did. But I'm going to play this compilation on the way out here, or some of it anyways. And I'll leave you with that on the way out, guys. So thank you for being here. Thank you for continuing to stand up for what's right. It's not going to stop anytime soon, guys. So we got to keep at it. We got to keep pushing. We got to keep spreading the information, because they're going to keep spreading the false information, as we all should know. Well, you know what? It looks like I either didn't grab that. I was pretty positive that I did. Maybe I'll just include it for you. You can watch it for yourself, and I'll air it on another end show, because I don't want to try to download that. Max Egan, thank you. I'm glad I waited anyway, just so I could get his name out there. Max Egan does a great job. Now, there's been some things, you know, I disagree, as I do with a lot of people on certain things, but he's, again, one of those people that is just unabashed. He will come out and he will talk about these things in a way that should, how these things should be discussed. We shouldn't be afraid to dabble into areas that people call conspiracy theory, right? Sort of like the concept, I mean, any number of things. I don't want to make this any longer. I will make sure I include this for you, this one right here. It'll be in the show notes, and I'll download it, make sure we play it going forward. But really, it's just a great compilation of a lot of these doctors standing up for you, talking about what's going on, revealing the truth. And it goes back to a lot of other situations. That's why I'll actually play one of my compilations on the way out that, again, show you the same thing. Dr. Rydell, Dr. Weiler, you know, a lot of these people standing up for you way back in the beginning that have been incredibly vindicated. It's just so obvious, guys. Thank you for being here. I love you all, as always. Question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country have we been told that you can't go to church because it's non-essential, but you can go get an abortion because that's essential. Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We cut off people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about that. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself. But what's happening now as unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look, he ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing, look. He ain't even do nothing.
We the people want to put our government back in its place. We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours is pulled under your nose.
There's a note that says,
I don't have to bring a note, and yours isn't even on.
You just do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen. Get out.
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.